Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
What's up, Devin?
Not much. All right,
what do you got for us? What do you got for us today?
All right. We are plain quiet folk and have no use for adventures. Nasty, disturbing, uncomfortable things make you late for dinner. I can't think what anyone sees in them. I messed up that last line. I can't think what anybody sees in them.
Ah, okay. No, that's all right. It wasn't too bad. Can't think what anybody sees in them. So I'm assuming that is, well, it's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's a Hobbit.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's maybe Bilbo writing before he went on his first adventure.
Right, right. That's when everyone's coming over to his house. I'm not exactly sure why I picked another Lord of the Rings quote. It's not like we're huge normal. I mean, we're fans, but
yeah, right.
But I think because I was looking through, we've talked about it before on the podcast. When Dustin and I are together, obviously we're both at home on our computers in our little areas, and I like to pull a nice photo up. Just while right. We're talking, just to have something to look at. I got this nice big monitor, and I don't want to just stare at
the cast page.
Yeah, the cast page and watching the voice take around. So right. I did. Yeah. I was looking through some like countryside photos and New Zealand photos, and of course, like Hobbiton pops up. So I pulled that up, and then I was like, yeah, maybe I'll just go with one of those reluctantly, like, adventurous Bilbo quotes, because him and, right, Frodo are totally different. Bilbo never wanted to go, but he was, like, the first of, not necessarily, but, you know, the first of his kind to go on adventures, and then
yeah,
Frodo was the opposite. Frodo was down for it, because Bilbo did talk about it a lot.
Totally, yeah, the stories and stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's some, like, there might some ancestor of Bilbo's that was also kind of an explorer or something, or maybe it's Merry and Pippin and an ancestor of theirs who's really tall or something. I forget, but
right,
yeah,
yeah. There's probably some big fans yelling at us like, hey, of course it was this guy 200 years ago that got a bunch of people in trouble because he went on an adventure. Blah blah blah.
Right. When I forget what we were trying to talk about last week, we were doing something. I was talking about something and I couldn't remember the term for it, and I can't remember what it was now. But of course, like, as soon as I'm done and I'm editing the podcast, it was like clear in my mind. I was like, why didn't I think about that? And I do that often. When I'm listening to other podcasts, people are like, what is that thing or what is it called?
And you're like, duh, it's so easy, simple.
Yeah, exactly. But when you're talking and you're like trying to go through a stream of thought and get out all your, you know, all of your thoughts on being recorded, it's a different story sometimes. It's weird.
Or just get your quote out clearly. I seem not to
try that a couple more times. I feel that's you've done good though. I mean, with the quotes, there have been what, maybe like a half a dozen times or more where you're like, okay, I gotta try it again. In like 51 episodes, it's episode 51.
It's not bad. I can read out loud sometimes. But anyway, so I was thinking of that and thinking of once people do get to that point where they're super comfy, and we go over this over and over, and there's a thing to be said for that, having the rhythms and the things you like, and your comfortable spot might be having the perfect workshop and being with your family and having, I'm going to go out here and do this, and then I'm going to take a walk. And obviously, there's nothing wrong for that, and I think nothing wrong with that. And I think Bilbo was—he's just in that comfortable hobbit mode, and he likes what he likes, and they just want to eat and be comfortable and live in their holes, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. Yeah. I think that's yeah, and that is. I think that's a. I think that's what a lot of people look for in life, is mm-hmm. just to be comfortable. I would say I think a lot of people are looking for that, but maybe not in the right way. You know, like I think a lot of people will think that if they make a lot of money, then they'll be able to live comfortably. Right. So you're like, right. Let me work really hard so I don't have to work really hard. Now, that is true. Right. And it works. But where's the limit? Right. Like how far do you have to go? How much money do you have to make to be comfortable? Like, do you have to have enough money that you can buy whatever you want at any point? Or do you just have to have enough money to be able to feed your family every week and not worry about food or your lodging? Right. Like, or do you just have to make enough money to take care of yourself? And what's that? What does that look like? Right. So obviously it's different for everybody, but I think when you can figure out what that number is or what that is without pushing it too far, like, you know, I would like to make enough money so I can do this. And, you know, if I make enough for that, then anything above that is just extra cushion. Right.
Right. You want to get to a point where you're not stressed about the little things and little bills. And
right.
I personally would like to make enough money where when the AT&T bill comes in, I don't have like a heart attack.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Or I don't get so I'll probably always get angry at cell phone companies because the way their prices creep up for no reason. And I you know, it's constant. You got to keep calling them back. What is this? Right. Why is this? Oh, we change. Well, we don't do that anymore. We change that. Okay. Either way, why am I paying $30 more?
Ugh. Right. Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah,
you know, maybe get to that point.
Right. Yeah. And, but, you know, and then like, what is your time worth? Right. What's your time outside of work worth? You know, so is it worth it to try to like work harder and make more money so you're even more comfortable, or you kind of figure out where that limit is and then you stop, right? Then you make the time to put time into your family and your, you know, your hobbies and things that make you happy and, you know, that are important to you in life.
Right. So. And that's a good problem to have. A lot of people can't get there. Like, I've made enough money where, 'cause some people don't even think of that dilemma 'cause they never get there.
Yeah.
There's always the struggle, and that's just how some people are. So let's do we want to talk about what we've been up to? Because I also wanted to move on. We're going to talk about the perfect shop or the way to get started with like an empty room. Let's say you have a 20x30 room,
right?
And how would you set it up, and how would you advise people to set it up? But before we go into that, do we want to talk about the things, your new dog, the wine barrel?
Yeah, right. Projects we're working on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we came back from Vermont. We got back on Saturday. Today is Thursday, and we brought back with us a little puppy dog, almost 5 months old, half beagle blue heeler is the other one. So Blue Heeler is kind of like an Australian Shepherd type size and, you know, hair length. And they're usually black with a lot of, or their hair is black and white. And it gives it this kind of gray, that light gray blue color. So she's a sweetheart. Her name is Luna. And she, she's my in-law's dog. They got her when she was a puppy, 7 weeks old or so. They've had her and situations have happened in their lives where they are unfortunately not able to be in the house for the summer very often. My mother-in-law works full time, and then my father-in-law, who's retired, is also helping to take care of his mother, and he's got to be away from the home for quite a bit this summer. So they had asked us if we wanted to take her for the summer for the next couple months, and then, you know, when it kind of slows back down, then we'll take her off. So that was the idea, and that's we were like, yeah, that's fine, sounds good, okay, we can do that. And then while we were up in Vermont visiting, the discussion came up that the possibility of us keeping Luna, if everything works out fine. And obviously she's a sweetheart and she's super lovey and she's a puppy, you know, she's biting stuff and we have toys for her. And so we have to get train her up some, but she's super sweet and like is not aggressive toward other dogs, you know, people she loves. So we may end up keeping her. It's still kind of up in the air depending on if my in-laws decide they want to actually take her back, or if they want to leave her with us. Before we realized that this might be an option, we also have been looking for another dog since our Sadie passed away. So we've been looking for another like lab. We've been doing the lab rescue of the kind of Chesapeake, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania area. So we are going to look at another dog named Toby, and he is a he's a golden retriever. I can't think of the other dog name. This is what I was just saying earlier, right? Trying to think of something. It's the Great Pyrenees. So Great Pyrenees golden retriever. So Great Pyrenees are like the big white fluffy dogs, you know, usually over 100 pounds, pretty big. But he's mixed with golden retriever. So golden retrievers obviously are, you know, 80 to 100 pounds as well. Good sized dogs, but not giants. So he'll be a little bit smaller. Right now he's 10 months old, I think 10 or 11 months old, and he's 80 pounds. So he's pretty big. Like, I don't think he's going to get way, way bigger, but, you know, he's still under a year, so he could maybe hit 100 pounds, which isn't crazy. Sadie was right around 70 pounds, 80 pounds. Even when she got a little older, she's a little chunkier, but not too much. So, we're going to look at him. But that was the plan, was to go look at him and possibly adopt him before we knew we'd have another dog.
Right.
So we may have two dogs, which I'm still kind of on the fence about, but, you know, but I do think that it will be better for both dogs to have another dog in the house. Like,
right.
For a puppy, it's good to have another dog because they can play and each wear each other out and stuff. And you know, he's still a puppy too. He's less than a year old. So yeah, I think it'll be fine. You know, it's my only hesitation, it's always been my hesitation about having a dog, and I've had a dog for the last, you know, almost my entire life, is that I'm very selfish when it comes to things I want to do. Like, I don't want to be restricted. I don't want to be like, oh, let's go here. Oh, wait, we can't because we have a dog and we don't have anyone to take care of or anywhere to put the dog, you know? So it's like that part of me is like hesitant because I'm like, oh, it's going to restrict so much of what we can do. You know, and like traveling with two dogs in our vehicle and, you know, having a crate that's big enough for either one dog or both dogs in the crate, you know, so there's just like all sorts of stuff. And it's just like, I'm sure it'll all be fine. He's super sweet. And, you know, I love Luna as well. She's a sweetheart. So we'll see. But that's where I'm at right now with the dogs.
Yeah. No, Luna's super sweet. Got to meet her for the first time. Just runs right up to you, one of those dogs. Just wants to be your friend right away.
Yeah, she's such a sweetheart. She likes people, and she's good off leash. You know, we've had her off leash here at the house the whole time. We haven't put her on leash except for I went over to swim in the pond one time with Corinne, and I went over to swim in the pond, and we leashed her then just because we were going to be swimming. We wanted to bring her over with us, but we don't want her just to wander away while we're swimming, which she might do. If we're outside with her, kind of sitting down, we can kind of be active with her. If she starts to wander, we can, you know, walk around the house and stuff, and she'll stay with us, which is really nice.
Do you have to take Luna to meet the other dog?
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
So we'll do the meet and greet. That'll be Saturday afternoon. So we'll bring Luna. I'm sure, like, Luna, when we were up in Vermont, our neighbors have, our in-laws neighbors have two dogs, a chocolate lab, like a pretty full size, big chocolate lab. And then a little teeny fluff ball, like puppy. That's Luna's same age. It's a little bit smaller than her, a little like white fuzzy dog, fluffy dog. And, she got along with both dogs, but the bigger dog, she's more hesitant around just because of the size. Right. So she was like very kind of like, you know, but they were fine. They were fine together. And then on the way back from Vermont, we stopped at our, Nicole's cousin, their house. And, there were two dogs there. There was a sheepdog, you know, kind of that Australian shepherd type dog as well. And then there was a spaniel type dog. Both are medium sized dogs, you know, 50, 60 pounds, something like that. And she was perfectly fine with both of them, you know, after they kind of like settled in, they were all good. So,
yeah,
I don't worry about her. And what we've heard from about Toby as well is that the woman who has him right now as the foster has three other dogs and they all get along fine. She has like one old dog that's kind of crotchety and bad moody. And he wanted to play with him one time and got, you know, kind of put in his place, like barked, and he just backed down and was like, okay, fine, I'll go play with other dogs. So, so it seems like he'll be a sweetheart. He apparently like loves people and loves all animals and So
cool.
Yeah. So we may be bringing another big dog, big fluffy white dog home.
Yeah, all types of
Saturday.
All types of shop dogs running around.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, we got some footage of Luna in this last when this video we're shooting now for the strap, the axe.
Yeah, the sling.
Yeah, sling. So you guys will see that in a few videos. We've got two more to edit and finish, but that. And then
we were working on the start of that yesterday. You know, we have footage for two other videos, which is good. You know, it's always good to get ahead if we can.
Mm-hmm.
And we have time, so shot some on that. Started, cut out and did the template for the head, the whole mast part that would be part of the sling. And I went down to Tandy Leather Factory, stopped in there and picked up all the hardware.
Nice.
Good. I got everything I got was exactly what I wanted except for one piece, and it's called a strap slide, and that's when you have the it's like the adjustment slider. It's like a double ring type thing, and you attach the leather to the middle of it, and then you slide up and down to make adjustments. They didn't have that in 3/4 inch. Like, they had everything else in 3/4 inch. They had that, and it was either 1 inch or 5/8. So I was like, it's funny. All the other hardware they had in 1 3/4, and then like half, you know, like all the kind of standard sizes. And that one they had no 3/4. And I actually went and talked to the woman up front, and she checked like online on the actual online Tandy Leather system, and they didn't have it at all. It was like a gap there. They were like, she's like, that's really weird. I don't see why, you know, and all of their all the different varieties of things. I think it's like, okay, well, I just got the 1 inch one, and it'll be fine. It'll be a 1/8 inch space on either side, but it shouldn't take away from it at all.
Right, it'll still hold the strap together.
Exactly. Yeah, because they'll be the end of one strap will be wrapped through the middle ring, and it'll be riveted. And then so that'll be, riveted pretty tight, so it'll hold it straight, and then so it'll slide up and down. It should be fine. And if it's not fine, then that'll be an interesting part of the video. Maybe we'll do I'll make one, fabricate one from just a piece of like a flat piece of steel, grind it out and shape it. We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll need to, but it's an option.
Right. So yesterday we did that. We shot the first half of that, and so we should just have one more day to shoot with that. And brought the wine, we got a wine barrel. We're doing for a video, making a wine barrel into a table. But pretty much,
like
the wine
kind of tall bar style table. Yeah.
Right. And it's I feel like it'll be a nice project because it's something a lot of people can do, and you can always find people trying to sell wine barrels for this or that,
Right.
50 to 100 bucks, and it's obviously it's already a table kind of anyway, so you could use it in your outdoor space or in your quote-unquote man cave, something like that, or she shed, I guess, a wine barrel might go. But yeah, we're going to order some a round glass, and then have the edge wood, depending on what we do there, and then band that with some type of ring of metal, kind of like what you'd see on a barrel metal band.
Right. Yeah, the strapping around the outside. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Yeah, so that'd be cool. And I was thinking, we were talking about how to do the top, and, I thought, make a square out of wood, with 45 degree angles on each end, and have it glued together, and then cut the circle out of that instead of having to, cut a circle out of a big piece of wood. But I was like, well, I can do less of an angle and do more pieces of wood and just have, nicer wood that goes all the way around. So, if I do a 10 degree angle and whatever that, I have to make up the 180 degrees or whatever it is to flatten it out.
You just have to join a bunch of them together.
Exactly, yeah. So glue and then put a clamp around the outside and then make a big circle. And it doesn't need to, it's not like holding pressure in any direction. It's just holding straight down. So the glue joints they're not going to be under stress to come apart, it's not like we're using it as a wheel, right? Where you're putting pressure on it. Top to bottom, it's going to be holding a table, and so I think it'll work fine. So we'll have to do two of those.
I think your bottom circle could just be something simple.
Well, it could be
because you're only going to see the top. I mean, unless that's the best way you can think of to make
right
the circle.
Well, I mean, I would think like we just get some, you know, get like a sheet of, you know, like nice plywood, like furniture grade plywood,
and then cut it
and then just or actually it could be for both of them and then just edge band it, and then we're gonna do a metal band around the outside anyway. You know, they have like wood laminate that you put on the edge of plywood so it cleans it up and looks nice.
Right.
So, yeah. But I mean, you know, so I don't know. But plywood's so expensive right now. So,
yeah, we'll see. You know. Yeah. But anyway, that's.
So I might look it up and look up some other options or something of how we could do that. But yeah, making like I guess it's what did we say 24 inches. So it's not like a gigantic circle. It's not going to be a huge tabletop. It's just going to be a piece on top that there's a small ring of wood that's holding the glass top, so you can see the top of the barrel, which would be cool.
Yep. So yeah, okay, we're going to move on to the what we want to talk about today. And I'm going to do a Dear Dustin from our friend Matt Brown, who does the music with me for the channel and the intro here every week.
Yeah.
And he's been on the podcast too. We got to do another one of those. That was fun.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, I got tons of comments about that one. Like people were like, "That one was so cool." Like, I heard other people talking about it on other podcasts and stuff, being like, "That was a really cool one." You know, they were like playing live, you know, doing the stuff.
Yeah.
Like, heck yeah, that was awesome.
All right, Dear Dustin. Oh wait, hang on. Let me find it.
Oh, the anticipation was killing me.
Dear Dustin, I pulled up the wrong thing.
Too loud.
I pulled up the wrong thing. No wonder it didn't seem right. Okay, here we go. Dear Dustin, speaking of podcasts, Dear Dustin, I need you to do some more content about setting up a shop efficiently, tool storage, etc., because I'm trying to get my garage set up and need to minimize the amount of stuff sitting on the floor. And I like hearing people talk about this subject. Matt Brown.
Nice.
So we can use that as, yeah, let's say you have a garage, but I also thought it'd be fun to, if you had a blank slate.
Right. Yeah. And so my mindset for this is, you know, my mindset, because I know the tools that I have, I'm starting to think about, okay, if I had a blank shop, what would I do with my tools that I have currently? You know, how would I set them up? And, you know, if I was moving to a new space. But I think it also is just like thinking about if I was starting a new shop, or if I was telling someone how to start a new shop, what things would I recommend that they have and how to set it up?
Right.
And all I can, I mean, obviously what I'm saying is based off of my experience of using a shop. I think the most important part of any space that you're going to use, whether that's like a studio or a kitchen or a shop, you know, anything like that, an office, is the efficiency of movement, right? So you want to be able to move and access the things you want to use the most often, easiest, right? So, so my mindset,
so let's say,
when I'm more, go ahead.
Hang on, let me set it up. So let's picture you have like a 20 by 30 rectangle. And obviously this could be any size.
Okay.
But like, let's say it's a, let's say it's like a 2-car garage.
Okay.
And you only need access to one of the doors. Right. So you can have one closed, and north is the back wall. East is the side wall. South are your two doors, and west is the other side wall. So you have that.
Okay.
And let's say that on the south part where the two doors are in your garage, that right side's open. So you walk in, where do you start to put tables? Do you need a middle workbench? Do you want like a wall of shelving?
Right.
Let's start there.
Yeah,
basic
so,
layout.
I think the main thing is you want to think about material storage. Like if you want to store your wood and or metal in your shop, you need to have a space for that. And the easiest way to access that is to have something you can go straight into from your door. So say along one wall. So say you're walking in from the south, you're on the left side of your shop. So you're on that west wall. That should be like tool storage there probably. Right. Either right. one. So that way you're in and out of your shop easily. You can get stuff
tool,
in.
Tool and material storage.
Yeah, I'm thinking material storage. So like what we have with the wood shelf, the wood storage, something like that. You need, you know, if you're doing any type of woodworking or metalworking, you're gonna want somewhere to store supplies. That's something that I don't. And I was thinking about this a little earlier when you suggested it, that I don't think people talk about that often. Is like, where do you store all the things you're going to make things out of? You know, because that's a big thing. You're like, okay, let me set up my shop. I'm thinking about my tools and my workbenches, but you need to have storage somewhere because that is what I think that's what kills a shop. That's what clutters a shop, is having random stuff everywhere that you're going to be making your stuff out of.
Right. And that's actually one thing, I guess, was it a few early episodes in Art of Craftsmanship where you actually put the storage rack up. If you go back to the beginning of the channel, you see that there was nothing was back there, or there was just more stuff just kind of stacked, and there was no shelving at the time.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, and there was just a bunch of other stuff, so I had to rearrange, and I wanted to use the back half of the basement. So, you know, rearrange all that stuff, clean it all up, put in the wood rack, and that way I'd have all that. Because I just had, like, some saw horses back there holding wood, but, you know, that gives you just one shelf, basically, and then underneath of it. So I wanted to have, you know, more options than that, so we built the wood rack.
Yeah, and I also think if you could set it up like that, it makes sense to have that easy access inside and maybe outside too. When you need more room, or you just want to work outside, you can go right out the door. Right, I mean, right now yours is kind of on the opposite corner because you didn't have much choice where to put it.
Right. Yeah.
But if it was closer to a front wall or to the front door of wherever, that's kind of nice because you just pull one of those long 10-footers out of something and it's right out the door and on some saw horses.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was thinking about that. Like that's something that if I'm looking at an empty space, I want to look at where do I want to store materials. And it could be materials and or tools, right? You know, where do you want storage that's easy to access? Because I think that's important. So like figure out what's the easiest thing to access, and that should be where you're storing supplies.
Right.
The other thing you can do with something, if you have like a concrete floor, is you can do like a movable rack. Yeah, like, and that would be nice too. Then you'd have something, you know, put some casters on it that are locking, and you can put it in one spot, but you can also move it around if you're doing a bunch of stuff on the other side of the shop and you want to have your, you know, or if you want to roll a bunch of stuff outside and do it out there, you could do it as well.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, obviously a big rack could get pretty heavy and could be, you know, tough to put on casters. But if you could do, a lot of times you'll see material storage like a triangle, you know, a long rack that's tilted in, so you can lean like plywood and stuff, and it'll lean back against itself. And you can move that around. I also oftentimes will see people use those type of things for clamps, which is another thing you need to think of for storage.
Mm. You know, it'd be really cool. Yeah. I was just thinking, like, now this is like fantasy level,
right?
So you have that whole south side where there's two big garage doors.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you could get rid of the split in the middle where the garage was, where you could have everything. I mean, this is like from watching those shows where people open up the whole side of their living room and they have like this outdoor space. But you have everything on tracks. So so let's say you had a big middle workbench that could slide 10 feet, 20 feet north to south. You could just push it and then you lock it down. So everything can like be like moved or pulled out, and you just have these train tracks north to south where everything can be like slid around.
That would be sweet. Yeah. Do something like in the floor. I mean, that's obviously why people use casters, because, you know, you can move wherever you want. But yeah, if you have it like, or like a big swinging, like a hinge thing, you can like just put a wheels on one side and have a hinge on the other side.
Yeah,
that would be sweet. That and, you know, when you get into bigger, you know, production and manufacturing, when you're doing, or, you know, like fabricating, if you're doing steel, you know, you're going to have some machines that are going to be cutting that are going to get really heavy.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that you got to think about, where you're going to put that stuff. So, but I'm thinking for a basic shop, in a basic two-car garage.
Back to reality. So, so you have the storage on the left side, and what do you have on the other sides?
So what I would do is I would have right in the middle, and kind of maybe closer to a little bit off center, would be a table saw, a big cabinet table saw with mm-hmm. an outfeed table that would be a bench. So with my shop, I have my middle bench, which I leave pretty much clear because that's the one we work on most of the time, and then I have my bench behind me. That's another thing. I definitely say have two benches, one in the front, one in the back, because having that double space is really nice, really important, I think, to have that kind of two spaces like that. You can work on both.
So you're thinking on the north wall, that's your back bench, and then in the middle you have your main middle bench.
Yeah, and see, the nice thing, though, like if you could have an outfeed table that would, or you'd have like your table saw maybe closer somewhere to the front doors, and then that way you can push larger material, like you can, you know, cut big sheets of plywood and stuff on the table saw. That's the one thing that I don't have in my shop that I would like to have, is like a bigger cabinet table saw on the end of a bench, because then you can use, like I said, your benches for your outfeed. So as you cut something, you push it past the blade, and you got to have, it has to have somewhere to go. That's what outfeed is. So the, you know, the material goes into another surface, and that surface can be a bench, a workshop bench, which is what I would have. So having like a longer bench, you know, maybe 8 feet or so, or 6 feet with a table saw on one end, so you can outfeed onto the workbench. Now that could be like on the right side, right? So then maybe you have, maybe on the right half of the two spaces, the two car garage spaces, you have maybe on the east wall, you would have your main workbench. And then, you know, parallel with that would be the table saw and outfeed table. So you'd have two benches there. Mm. And that, so that way they're, you know, like I said, it's parallel with the east wall. And then across the back wall, you could have the bigger machines, right?
So
like a you know, belt sand, or you know, whatever sanders or grinders you have, if you want to have them there, or a bandsaw, or you know, things like that. You could also have a chop saw, like a chop saw station that's longer, which is nice. You know, you can have a chop saw in the middle of, say, like an 8 foot bench or an 8 foot like surface. That way, you can chop longer things down. That would be nice. But really, I think like, What I would say for a basic shop is you want to have those two benches, which is, I think, are really nice to have two benches. So one against a wall and then one in front of you, so you can turn around and work on both sides of you. And right. on your bench that's against a wall, whatever one is like kind of permanently against the wall, put up that pegboard system.
Oh yeah,
having a system that you can hang stuff up instead of putting it away in drawers is, I think, is really nice. Everything's there. It's all visible. You know, it's hanging. It has its own home. When I first set up the pegboard in my basement shop here, I had this idea to go like put everything where I wanted it, and then go around and trace around it with markers so everything had like its specific home.
Right.
Which is what our grandfather did.
Yeah. Right.
Down in their home in Florida, he had that. But that was like, you know, it's what, like when he was like in his 60s or maybe 50s or 60s that he did that and had that. You know, by that point, I think he knew which tools he was going to have, and he had those tools, right? For me, as a younger guy and like continually learning new things and having new hobbies, like that pegboard has changed somewhat, not a ton, but it's changed somewhat over the years.
Right.
And so I hesitated before I, you know, started tracing around stuff. I was like, well, let me just wait. Let me just put everything where I want it. You know, I had and I organized the pegboard based off of things that I knew I would do. Like there's a section that's all bow making, you know, it's like rasps and my draw knives and spoke shaves. And then there's a section that's like, you know, vice grips and pliers. And then there's a section that's files and other, you know, random things. And then there's a hammer section, and then there's a screwdriver section. Right. So I had those things, like I knew, and those areas have stayed pretty much the same. But I've definitely, like, tools have changed. I lose a tool, or somehow a tool will go missing and another tool will replace it. And that would bug me way worse if I had like another tool that was kind of the right shape, but it didn't really match the like tracing. Oh, that would kill me. So put up a pegboard system, because I think that works really well. It's cheap, you know, that like MDF pegboard is cheap, and you know, like the little pegs and stuff, they're cheap, you know, for something like maybe $50 at the most. You can have the pegboard, like a full sheet of pegboard, 4x8 foot, or you know, whatever, 2.5, 3x8 foot, whatever it is, the whole length of your bench, and all the pegs you could want, you know, for $40 or $50.
Right. Okay. So you have that, and let's say, I mean, you get a bunch of different tools. Now you've built a lot of moving, rolling,
right,
stands for your stuff.
Right. Yeah.
You think people should try to do that for some of the things they know they're really going to use? I mean, you have some that you don't use, and you've talked about you kind of have too much right now.
Right. Yeah. Too many things. Too many duplicates of things.
So if there's a few tools that you think you should be able to roll out and roll in,
right,
like a nice bandsaw, a grinder,
Yeah, I think having a pedestal for a grinder, and we're talking about a tabletop grinder with two wheels on either side, bench grinder. That I think is something that can be movable because it can be used all over the place, and you're not putting a ton of force into it. I mean, you are grinding stuff, but usually they spin so fast that you're using it. Now, obviously, if you can have a permanent spot for that, that's important. But a bench grinder is important. The other tools I think you should definitely have would be a chop saw. And I think the chop saw should have a prominent spot wherever it is. It's going to be used all the time to make cuts. And if you can have a sliding, chop saw that can cut deeper, that. And then obviously it's a miter, you can cut 45 and whatever angles you want as well. That's huge in any shop, anytime you're cutting wood. I didn't have a bandsaw for a while, and as soon as I got a bandsaw, I use it all the time, the time. So if you can get a bandsaw, even a smaller tabletop bandsaw, it makes a huge difference.
I'd say you go to that more than any other tool in the shop.
Yeah, I use the bandsaw a lot because it can do tighter turns and curves and it's a little bit easier to control. Not really easier to control than chop saw. They both have their thing, but I use the chop saw. I probably use the bandsaw the most to cut, and then the chop saw second most. Right, that's because I'm usually cutting smaller things, so the smaller things are nice on the bandsaw. The larger things are 2x4s and whatever, any larger dimensional lumber is cut on the chop saw. Movable stuff. If you have, even if you don't need to move your stuff all that often, if you can build some type of platform that you can put things on and put casters on, then your shop can mutate and change as your needs change. Mm-hmm. So if you know for a project you're going to be using the grinder, the bench grinder, for a whole bunch of it, then you just roll it up closer to you. Right.
Right.
And then if you're going to use the bandsaw a lot, roll it up closer to you. That's what I do. And that's how I utilize that back space the most, is have that space movable. I had that same thing with the forge and stuff. I put that on wheels so I could kind of move it in and out, and, using having a smaller space, you have to figure out when you're working on a project, what's the tool you need. And if you can move it. Now, if you have enough space, you can put it wherever you want it. And then you just decide what thing you're going to use the most often. Like if it's going to be your bandsaw, well, then that should be closest to you. And then the next thing and the next thing, moving down the space.
Yeah.
You can also rearrange the space to have your workbenches could be where you're doing woodwork and smaller stuff that, you need to sit down and you have your vise. I would definitely say put a vise on the corner of any workbench you have. Any work surface should have a vise on it. Whether that's a carpenter's vise that's face mounted to the front of a workbench, which is what I have. I have my workbench, I have my carpenter's vise on the front of it, and then the double handle vise on the end, which I might switch those if I wanted, but it is nice to have an end mount and a side mount. And then on my the bench against the wall, the one that's the most secure, I have the bigger machinist vise there, mechanics vise in that. And I like that as well. Another thing I'd recommend, and this has actually worked out really well for me multiple times, is having that vise off of the front of the bench. So it's actually not mounted to the top of the bench. It's mounted off the front. And I have it a 2x6 or 2x8 that kind of comes across, that's mounted securely to the top of my bench. And then my vise is out. That way I have full range of access straight down from the vise on three sides. And that's made a great difference. I think that's... I put that like that long before I ever had a post vise, but that's the great thing about a post vise. It's it's designed to come out. Right. So I basically made my own post vise by doing that and then mounting a piece of piece of, what's that called? Just a conduit, you know, black pipe, you know, straight down the floor under a flange, you know, and we did the video.
Right. Screw that in. Yeah. Yeah. You guys can see that. That was a video early on.
Yeah. So I think like having the benches is important. You know, having material storage, tool storage is also important for those things that you're not going to use that often. I have a couple, like open shelves. I have the one on the right side of my bench, which is there, and then I have a closed metal cabinet. Those both have a lot of, you know, like palm sander and circular saw and drills and things like that. Things that, you know, I'm not going to use all the time, but need to be somewhere. You know, the ones I use more often are in the open, you know, shelving, and the ones I use less often are in the cabinets.
Right. So, I think as much open shelving as you can afford on empty spots of your walls, you know.
Right. Yeah.
You seem to have a lot of stuff on those, and those are always good to be able to at a quick glance look at what you have. Right. I mean, it's a little tricky depending on how much, you know, woodworking and stuff, and how much dust and dirt and stuff is going to get on them because they're out. But maybe, and you know, get yourself a good filtration system or do something like that if you can.
Right.
Which is one thing the shop, Art of Craftsmanship shop is lacking right now.
Right. Yeah. And the one thing that I actually really like about the shop, which is a deterrent for that, is the low ceiling.
Right.
Because I have all the exposed, you know, rafters or whatever, or joists from the floor above. That I nail into and I hang stuff from, and I've got lights clipped to, and I have, you know, that's the other thing. You definitely have to have good lights. So if you don't have good lighting, you know, get some clamp lights, you know, run some extensions, do whatever you need to do to get good lighting, because that makes a huge difference. There's lots of options for, you know, they have nice, like what used to be like a 4-foot fluorescent light. They now do LEDs, and you can get those for pretty cheap, you know, $25 or something for like a double LED fluorescent bulb light that's 4 feet long. That'll give you a lot of nice light from above.
Yeah.
And the little magnet lights that I have on different tools, that makes a big difference too, because then, you know, I can have lots of light, but then I can put directional light on one little spot if I'm working on something small, which is pretty important too.
So. Yeah, so that is an advantage of kind of the low basement style. Yeah. Because, you have so much stuff on the ceiling.
Yeah, exactly.
Clamps and things.
All my clamps, yep. Mm-hmm.
Saws hanging and spare wood and like bows and all types of stuff. I mean, I don't know how you would do that in like a 10-foot garage. You know, maybe you could have some stuff hanging down. I don't know. A couple. I mean, it wouldn't have to be like a whole drop ceiling thing. But you could maybe run a few steel bars or something, or even wooden, you know,
you 4x4s. Right, exactly. You could do some shelving along the walls that's up high, but you can also do like suspended hanging shelving as well.
Right, right.
Like our friends the Greens have in their 2-car garage, they have a system that's like a suspended hanging storage system as well. And from that, you know, he has like some sawhorses hanging that are right in the middle of the shop in a spot that's out of the way, and, you know, be able to store some things there. So really, I think looking at your space, looking at what area is the most accessible from outside, and saving that area for the storage, you know, like where you're moving material storage in and out. Then you look at your space and you think, okay, where can I put, I would say, if you can't do two benches right, you want to do one bench against the wall that you can secure, so it's really secure, because it needs to be sturdy so you can clamp something in, you know, on it and shape it, and it's not shaking around. You know, and then if you can do a second bench, even if it's just a table, you know, putting a table, like I said, like the table saw with an outfeed table. Having that extra surface it's been like, that was a huge thing that I did in my shop that I really liked. You know, and I've been in other shops and, you know, things throughout the years in school and in grad school, and having that double table is really nice, because, again, it's that, like, the space, the accessibility, right? So I can stand in one spot, and I can, like, I have my chop saw right next to me. I have, right now, I have the drill press right behind me on the bench, so that's got to move. But You know, vise at one end of the bench, all the tools in front of me. And then I turn around and I have a carpenter's vise and I have my surface there. And then, you know, a clamp at the end and a plug above me, you know, being able to stand basically in one spot and turn around and do pretty much everything I need to do any, like, you know, tools and everything are right there. That's, that makes a huge difference. And I like having those two surfaces on either side.
Yeah. And you rarely come on the other side of the bench because you have everything there within walking distance. Like, there's like right. an L of area that you walk in.
Right, exactly.
From the front door, yeah. behind the middle bench, and across back to the storage and other things. And that right. the other side is all, I mean, obviously you have to, some you're going to have to set it up for household things.
Right, exactly.
Because yeah. you can't, you're never going to really, I mean, if you have a family, you're never going to be able to take the whole garage or the whole right. basement.
Yeah.
You'll need a wall of other stuff. But even on the other side of it is kind of my area where I can always be right. shooting.
Yep.
And Dustin rarely comes over on that side just because he has everything kind of set up where he can reach it.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that, yeah, that makes a big difference, just having that, like, everything in that space. Obviously, you know, you have, like you said, like, you have a flow, things that I know. And, you know, I have that whole one wall that's all storage for, you know, camping supplies and whatever, you know, life, house stuff. Yeah. And axes, my axes hanging up behind you.
Right.
But yeah, yeah, you know, you think about your hobbies, think about things that you want to do in your shop. Make sure you have those things the most accessible to you. And then, you know, then have a selection of tools that can get whatever else you need done as well. You know, if you need to drill a hole in some metal so that way you can hang something in your house, then you have, you know, access to that. You know, if you need to cut a piece of wood to do trim, or if you, you know, if you have, like, whatever, you need to fabricate something, you know, having some way to heat up some steel and bend a piece of round bar or something, you know, like, have a just like a hand blowtorch, things like that. You know, think about those main things that you might need to do, and have, you know, the things you love the most and what you want to, you know, focus your hobbies on, that should be central in your shop. And then, you know, have some space for other things. But yeah, I would say a bench, some material storage. And then if, like I said, the one thing that I have a small movable table saw that we use and you guys have seen on the channel, but it's I don't have a really good space for it at the end. It does kind of fit at the end of my bench, but it fits right where the vise is as well. So I want that vise at that end, so it's not a permanent solution. So that's one thing that I would try to figure out how to do differently. And the thing that I think is important to have, a table saw. If you can have a table saw, if you're going to do any type of, like, any type of home stuff, or, you know, you're building things, you're going to have to cut down larger dimensional lumber into smaller pieces, and having a table saw, a chop saw, a bandsaw, those are pretty important.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, I think that's a good starting point for anyone, and that's yeah. if they're lucky enough to be able to go into an empty space and just start from scratch. But yeah, a lot of heavy duty tables, things on rollers, a lot of yeah. shelving, get stuff up off the floor.
Yeah, I was gonna say that too. Yeah, get your stuff off the floor, especially if you're doing woodwork. You're gonna want to be able to sweep, and having mm-hmm. things up off the floor is important. And that's another benefit to having things on casters and wheels and things that you can move around, is that you can move them out of the way and sweep and clean up and then put them back.
And another thing which is nice on your side is some type of what do you call those, like those walking pads?
Yeah, I have mats. Yeah, like a what's it called, a stress, you know, or it's just the mats on the floor. And that actually is a big, yeah, something that I didn't think about, but that's something that's pretty important for me doing metal and woodwork. I have those. They're like, I think they're actually for, like, stalls, horses' stalls. So they're hard rubber, and right. they have, they're, you know, they're rubber, so they're soft. They're softer than my concrete floor, but they have holes in them, and the holes are maybe half an inch. You know, so there's a whole pattern of holes, and that actually allows wood, dust, and random things to fall into the holes. So I'm not actually standing on the whatever material I'm, like, shaping. So it's really nice to have that. And obviously, it's you got to clean it, right? So every once in a while, I got to pick them up, and there's like a ton of shit inside, and I got to like
bend them
out and clean it up. But you know, that is what it is. It makes it very easy to work in that space and not have it to be walking on top of,
right?
You know, wood, you know, sawdust and shavings and little, you know, bits of metal and stuff.
And just for the comfort, a couple things for the comfort of standing there for that long, it's so much more comfortable. If you ever look behind a cashier or a cash register, there's always a rubber pad. Right. And those people know, those are the ones standing for 8 hours. It's so much easier on your legs and feet. But another big advantage with the holes is you're over there and if you drop stuff, you drop that little screw, you drop this or that, it stops and it's in somewhere. I mean, it'll drop down into it, but it'll hit it and it won't go flying. It'll land and it'll kind of stay. Right. So you can find the things you drop. And if you drop sensitive things,
right?
Let's say if it's electronics or whether it be a knife that's fragile because it hasn't been whatever. What's the step before it's tempered?
Yeah, it hasn't been tempered right after heat.
And you drop that down on the rubber. It's not going to shatter on your concrete floor.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I've dropped stuff on that. I've also dropped stuff on the concrete floor and, you know, not good, but yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Dropping stuff there. Yeah. It definitely collects things, which is nice. You know, like, if I drop a little screw or something, it doesn't go far, you know, it is rubber. So it's a little bouncy, but it's just like blink and pops and lands in the hole. Yeah. You know, I can kind of look around and inevitably, of course, like probably 25% of the time, whatever I drop just disappears forever into the void. But that's screws and hardware in general. That's one of the things, one of the bits of advice that I learned years ago watching a Wrangler Star video. He's like, all right, we need four screws for this project. He's like, so I'm going to grab six because inevitably I'm going to drop one and I'm never going to be able to find it. So he's like, always grab at least one or two more than what you need if you're walking out of your shop to do something. And I always do that. And whenever I'm doing that, I always think, oh, let me grab one or two more. And I just remember that thing because, like, you're going to drop it and you're never going to find that thing. It doesn't matter what you do. It'll, like, spin off into some, you know, second dimension and be gone. So yeah, just, you know, think about that. Think about the material storage. Think about where you want to work, what surface you want to work on. One of the things I also I always laughed about from there was a good Alex Steele video. He always talked about getting rid of horizontal surfaces, because anything that you have that's just a table or a surface that's not being used all the time is just going to collect stuff. You're just going to put stuff on it and it's just going to collect. So if you can hang things up, you know, if you have like shelves and things, you have to have some place to put stuff, but you know, have designated spaces for tools, things that, you know, they're going to go back to their homes, hang things up if you can, get things, you know, have individual spots for things. That way you're not just putting down, you know, tables and surfaces that are just, you're never going to use because they're just going to be full of junk.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's going to happen, but, you know, try to alleviate it as much as possible. So, yep.
Cool. Well, that's a good starter and lots of good tips there.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Recommendations?
Yeah. Actually, when we were thinking about this, I was thinking back. And so years ago, I started watching Jimmy DiResta's videos, and he had a shop in his I guess there was a basement shop that he had in, I think it was in Manhattan. I don't think it was in Brooklyn, but I think he had a shop in Manhattan that was in the basement of a building. And so it always kind of reminded me of this basement shop here. And then actually, Blackbeard Projects was commenting on our video recently, the Giotto video, and mentioned how it was reminiscent of Jimmy DiResta's old basement shop, which I was really happy about. but he's got some pretty cool videos. So my recommendation is actually, if you go back and watch some of his earlier videos from 4 or 5 years ago, you can check out his shop. He's got one video that he actually posted. That's not his. Well, he's got some cool videos in that shop. If you look back at his every time he'd hit 100,000, he'd do a collections video, And so I think it's like his 300,000 or 400,000 collections video is like Hammers and whatever. But, a lot of those
DiResta?
Jimmy DiResta, yeah. Mm. He's got those early shot, early collection videos, which he'll be like walking around a shop. He's got one of all of his vices, right? So he's like just walking around, this is his vice. And he'll tell you like where he got them from. But those are cool because you get this view of him just walking around a shop. It's a super cool shop and set up in a way that's realistic, I think. You know, it's not, it wasn't like super clean. Like he had clutter, but he had a good big works table in the middle, and he had some other work surfaces. And, you know, he was really able to use that space really well. So if you're interested in like small space shops and how they can come together well, take a look at those early Jimmy DiResta videos.
Yeah. Cool. And, right. And I would say that another, to go back to tips, if you could just take your shop and add 5 feet of space around everything, 5 extra feet of space. If you can do 10 feet of space around everything, even better.
Right. Yeah. Like,
that's why you have these huge, these really big, when the people do end up just making like a pole barn.
Right.
And they just stick it, and everything's got like 15 feet of nothing around it.
Right, exactly.
That's really the best thing. I mean, it's not cozy, but everything has as much room as you'll ever need around it.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of the things too. Like when I built my dining room table, you know, my table is, I think it's 4 by 8, so it's basically like a sheet of plywood, 4 by 8 feet. And I didn't have like space to do that, so I actually was using my buddy Sean's place, and we were doing it in his basement on the floor because he had a lot of floor space. So, you know, we were gluing it all together, building that top. You know, having that floor space was nice too. That's not something that I have here. You know, but that is something that I could have done that up on a table if I had a, you know, like in the shop now with the table I have, I can put a sheet of plywood on top of that and make that surface bigger if I needed to. Right. So that's another thing. It is like a big open space. And that's why that's another reason why I think having that second bench is really nice, because one bench can be some tools. It has my chop saw. It has the drill press. Sometimes it has some other stuff. It has the vices.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's against the wall. It doesn't have 4 sides that are open. So having that second table in the middle that has space all the way around it, that makes my smaller space really versatile, because I can build out and use that space longer. I can put something long across that table and it can go both ways. So I think that now I'm thinking is probably one of the reasons why I really like having that middle table, is because it has the space all around it.
Mm, yeah. Cool. My recommendation is a meat eater guy, but he's got his own podcast on the Meat Eater Podcast Network now called Bear Grease.
Okay.
His name's Clay Newcomb, and they do these really, really well produced podcasts, like with music and sound effects, and he's a avid hunter and has mules and all this type of stuff, so he'll like take you out and blah blah blah.
That's cool.
But he comes up with these really great concepts and stories, and episode 4 is Death of a Bear Hunter. There's this guy who Clay Newcomb has been kind of obsessed with, named Frederick Gerstecker, or Friedrich Gerstecker. He was a German immigrant in the, I guess, early 1800s or mid 1800s, and he came over to hunt in the Ozarks. And without his knowledge, he would send these letters home, and his mother would print them. And by the time he got back, he was like this national hero.
Nice.
Like this Wild West, almost, you know, like Daniel Boone style character who would hunt black bear and talk about his adventures and meeting Native Americans and hunting with them and doing. And he has a Gerstecker has a book which I've been looking for, which I can't find, but it's so old that it's what do you call it when you can't have a trademark, or you can't copyright it anymore, open source or something.
Right, yeah.
So a lot of different people have printed it, but it's hard to, I'm trying to find a good copy of it, so I'm looking on Amazon. Right. But anyway, Clay Newcomb reads from this book and talks about a specific story in it, and it's not really a spoiler because he talks about it. it's Gerstetter's friend Erskine, which is the only name. Him and Frederick are hunting, and Erskine gets killed by this black bear that they're hunting. And Gerstetter gets really hurt, and a bunch of their dogs die, their dog hunting dogs die. And so then he goes into that, and he reads from the book, and then he goes into maybe searching for the grave of Erskine, and it's right near where he grew up, and it's just really good. They go through this stuff, and then his other podcasts aren't always stories like that, but he really goes in depth, and it's really a highly produced podcast.
Nice.
But yeah, it's another thing. He's I think he's pretty well known. Obviously, he's a meat eater guy now, and he's on that show. And
right,
yeah. I think he was just on Joe Rogan's podcast, so it's like he's coming up big. But the podcast Bear Grease, really cool. Start with Death of a Bear Hunter.
Right, nice, right on. I I was thinking, you know, like we tend to, not always, but recommend more well-known people who don't necessarily need the recommendation. Right. But the whole point of the recommendations is that, like, we're excited about something that we think other people would look at because it's inspirational or it's interesting or, you know. So if I probably maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, went back and started looking at some of those early Jimmy Duresta videos again just because there was something different about them that I really liked. And when I went back and I was like, this is really cool, right? And I started learning things. He's got some tips videos and stuff and things that I either forgot about or never saw. And, you know, so even though there are people who are, might, you know, be more well known, if we're thinking of things that interest us, you know, things that are cool, that's what it's about, right? So it doesn't have, like, our recommendations don't have to be
right,
just to be able to bring smaller channels up, which is always great. And I love doing that, but it's really just like, what's interesting, you know, like when I'm talking to my buddies, like, hey, did you see this thing? It's really cool. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. Yeah. It's just,
like we always say, there's so much good stuff out there, especially in the podcast world and YouTube world, that, and there's so many of the times where someone points out someone that you had no idea about and you do realize they're already huge.
Right. Yeah.
You're like, well, he's got like millions of, I've never seen this. And then you're like, this is great. This is amazing. So things like that, since there's so much content, we'll just try to point out if we find something really good, we're just going to point it out whether it's huge or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget, you know, somebody like Essential Craftsman, that channel, which is really cool. Like, they do awesome stuff and I love watching his stuff. I had no idea who he was until someone commented on one of our videos and was like, oh, you're obviously inspired by the Essential Craftsman. And I was like, oh, who's that? So I went and looked it up and I was like, yeah, this dude's awesome. I was like, I've never heard of him, but I could see why you would, you know, like, equate the two of us together. Like, cause it's very, you know, just like the people making stuff and doing stuff and talking about, you know, cool stuff. So you never know who you're going to like introduce to someone who they've never heard of or something that they're going to see, which is going to inspire them to do something or make something or tell something else about, you know, about your channel or whatever. So it's always good.
Yeah. It's such a strange time where you can have someone who's been seen by millions and millions of people and majority of people don't know who he is.
Like, right. Exactly.
Or who they are. It's just strange. So that's why you need, that's why we do recommendations. I always like when I get good recommendations, so
yeah,
we're going to keep doing it, and we're going to keep promoting these huge channels who need our help.
It's funny, because I have, there are some other, like, the Knife Talk podcast, they used to do recommendations a lot at the end of the episodes, and they haven't done them in a while, and I realized, like, that I missed it, you know? I was like, oh, that was always nice, you know, I liked seeing here, you know, looking up the people that they would recommend. You know, and there are some other, you know, podcasts that I like that do that or, you know, have done it at one point and are stopped. And so I think it's cool. And, you know, we might not always have recommendation every week, but we try to just because it's fun. And why not? You know?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Cool. All right, man. Well, that's it. Yeah. So I like the idea of talking about shop stuff. Maybe that would be kind of an interesting thing when we have, you know, other people are on, maybe ask them about their shop, like how, what they like about it, what they don't.
That might be
an interesting thing, you know, what they would change if they could.
Right.
You know, because that's the one thing I said, is like having a table saw in the middle. That would be something that I would put, like, I would make that more of a priority in a new shop if I had the ability to. So
yeah, maybe like the thing you're most proud of about your shop, the most right. ingenious thing, and then the your biggest bugaboo about
yeah, exactly.
your shop.
Yeah, the annoyance, something that always right. annoys you, right? I love that. You know, obviously we could recommend like Adam Savage's cave, you know, because that's such a cool shop too. but he, you know, he's been doing so much of that over the doing all that infrastructure building and changing and always like doing stuff. It always inspires me to be like, oh, okay, let me go down the shop and look at what could be better, you know, or what I always use and it's just not convenient, you know, like what can I do to make it better for me, you know? Cause that's, yeah. I think that's the thing, like having the shop, like Matt said, you know, when he goes in now into the space, it's just all the stuff on the floor. He needs some advice, like somebody to like help him get going, you know, like,
yeah.
what do I need to do? I want to make it usable, but I have to get over this hurdle. But definitely like spending time in your shop, cleaning up, organizing things. It's so rewarding when you're done and you're like, the next time you go in there, you can use something. Everything's there where you want it. It makes a big difference.
I'm still waiting for my camera equipment shelf on that yeah, back right. wall.
Oh, when I build a
you did give
axe,
me a table to put the bag
rack.
On.
Yeah, exactly. Here's your table.
I do have a table that's usually covered with your the boxes that you So yeah, before we go, we got a bunch of fun stuff coming up. We finally will. I know we keep talking about it. We're going to do another Brothers podcast probably yeah. this weekend. So it'll come out next week.
Right. Yeah. Next week is episode 52. This is today's episode 51. Next week's 52, which technically we took Easter off. So this episode is our 1 year anniversary episode.
Oh.
Our first one came out in July 1st of 2020. And today is July 1st of 2021. When you guys will be listening to this, it's just Friday, which is July 2nd, which is my wedding anniversary. Hey,
right.
16 years. Yeah.
yeah. So that, and we've got some stuff
week,
coming up with yeah. other, this month we'll be doing stuff and other makers, and we might have a visit to the shop, and we can talk about that next week or the week after, but it's going to be a fun month.
Yeah. Yep. It's going to be awesome. Cool. All right, everybody. Well, thank you all so much for listening. It's been a blast. Make sure you go check us out on YouTube, The Art of Craftsmanship. You know, check out our videos. We always try to talk about things that we do in that on the channel because that's what we like. We like to send you guys that way and go look at, you know, you can hear us talking about it. We'll give you the fun thing about the podcast. It's behind the scenes, right? You get a little bit behind of what's going on. But over there is where we're like showing you the fun stuff we love to do. So go check us out on YouTube. And you can follow us both on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship and at The Art of Camera Guy. If you guys have a question that you want to ask specifically on the podcast and you want Devin to do it as a
Dear Dustin.
you can send him a DM directly to the Art of Camera Guy, and then he can ask me that. Or, you know, comment on the videos and maybe even put a Dear Dustin there. We might read it on the podcast. It's been fun.
Yeah.
And lastly, if you want to support the channel and the podcast even more, you can always go find us on Patreon, patreon.com/theartofcraftsmanship. And all of our patrons who follow us over there, we cannot thank you enough. That support is huge for what we do. It really inspires us to like keep making stuff and doing stuff because we know people are out there who really appreciate it. And even if you're not, you know, if you're not a patron, that's fine too. As long as you're enjoying what we're doing and you're sharing it with some friends and telling people about it, and you know, it makes a big difference for us. So,
yeah, and we can't offer as much stuff as we'd like to since it's just us and I on Patreon extra.
Right.
But I mean, and we do have to get some stuff going with Discord and stuff. But all of it goes to gear and stuff. So if you appreciate anything we do and want to throw in a dollar or two or any more. It's great, and it just all goes to gear, and we keep making more and more stuff.
Right, absolutely. Yep, so it's been a blast so far. All right, everybody. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Next week, we will have the Four Brothers episode number 52.
Woo!
52 weeks in a year. Keep on going.
So put those earmuffs on your kids in the car and
yeah, right. Exactly.
Crack open a beer and have some fun with us.
Enjoy, because that's what we'll be doing. Expect a bunch of laughs and a bunch of, you know, fun stories hanging out in the shop. All right, everybody. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.